Welcome to the Center in the City podcast. I'm your host, Wade Brill, and during this series, I'll be interviewing various thought leaders, wellness experts, and humans on how they practice sustainable self-care and mindfulness. We'll get real and raw, talk about the light and the shadow side of self-care and mindfulness, and how we can actually stay centered amid the chaos and the hustle and bustle of our modern day world. So settle in and get centered. This podcast episode is brought to you by Centered in the City, a virtual on-demand self-care and mindfulness platform with different meditations, journaling prompts, nourishing recipes, and Pilates flows, all designed to support you feeling calm, focused, and energized as you live your life in this modern day world. For more information, head on over to centeredinthecity.com and claim your 7-day free trial. Before we jump into today's podcast episode, I wanted to share a really exciting opportunity. This summer, over Solstice weekend, June 21st, I will be facilitating a weekend silent meditation retreat for those busy professional women who are looking for some space to untangle from the noise and connect deeply to your own heart, body, and mind. Retreat will be full of guided movement and meditation and journaling and circle connection time with other like-minded people and an opportunity to practice mindful eating while really eating delicious, nourishing, yummy food. I can't wait and feel honored to be able to create the conditions, this beautiful space on Woodby Island in the Pacific Northwest, to be in nature in a beautiful home with really curated experiences to help you just tune into your own wisdom. It feels like such an honor, and there are only 8 spots open. So if this silent retreat idea kind of is curious to you, it's pulling at your heartstrings, I welcome you to apply and check it out in the show notes. Welcome back to the Centered in the City podcast. I am so glad you are here. On today's podcast episode, I welcome Amy Fagan. Amy is the host of Grounded in Maine podcast, and we met a few years ago. I fell in love with Amy's excitement, enthusiasm for everything having to do with nature and animals and food and nourishment and community and exploring this theme of sustainability. So as we start to head into the spring season, I thought it would be the perfect time to have Amy on the podcast to explore how can we bring a little bit more sustainability into our conscious choices as we live our busy lives. I'll be sharing some more practical sustainability practices that you can implement in your daily life at the end of the interview with Amy, so make sure to stick around and check them out. A little bit about Amy. She started Grounded in Maine podcast in 2020. She lives in Maine with her dog, 2 cats, chickens, works full-time, volunteers weekly at a farm that grows organic produce solely to donate to local pantries and the elderly community. I know you'll enjoy this episode, so settle in and let's get centered. Amy, welcome to the Centered in the City podcast.
Wow, Wade, I'm psyched to be here. Thanks.
I feel like we both just turned on our podcasting voice and I love it. No, I love it. It's so good. It just brought a huge smile. I just wanted to call us both out. Amy, I'm excited to have you on the podcast for so many reasons. And I'd love to kick us off by you sharing, what does being centered mean to you?
Centered is going to be just like, what makes you feel, for me, it's like whole, like what makes you feel like you have a grip on life. Really just like that. It, for me, it's like that simple. Centered is going to be like, I mean, for me, my podcast is called Grounded in Maine. So grounded is very similar to that. I think it's, kind of a, yeah, just a wholeness.
Mm, I love that. It's interesting. This concept of our whole being has very much become a theme that I've been hearing people bring up and how they connect to the word center. Talk to us about your podcast. What inspired you to start Grounded in Maine?
that is a little funny. I am a child of the 80s. I grew up in the 80s, which was I was talking to somebody else who said, were you there in such and such of the 80s? But I remember the 80s as being like super duper Hairspray, big hair, loud engines, just like excess and loud, and everything was just like carefree. And it was fun, but we also like we killed the atmosphere. It's our fault. And so I was telling someone like I feel like we kind of need to pay it back. So that's part of it. I mean, I always grew up like recycling and stuff like that. And I volunteer at a farm locally who that grows organic produce just to donate it to the local food banks. And while we were gardening one day, we were talking about how cool it would be to start a YouTube channel. A friend of mine and I do a YouTube channel to learn homesteading skills. And like we would talk to homesteaders and we would learn a different skill each week. And then we would take it back home and we would try it and then report back the next week, whether it was doable or not. And then she kind of dropped off. And I'm like, well, I am not going to be on YouTube by myself on camera. No, thank you. So it was going to be a podcast. I had some sort of unsavory experiences with homesteader people. So I was like, let's just go sustainability because it's wide, it's big, it can be a little intimidating for people. So let's try to clarify it a little bit more easy to understand and bite size.
How do you define sustainability? Because I think that's a word that is used a lot in many different fields now. And even, positions at companies, there's now sustainability roles here and there. My husband's in the sustainability field. My brother's in the sustainability field.
That's
Like,
so
so I'm curious, like, how do you define it?
cool. I mean, sustainability is huge. It is. It's, I mean, it can be sustainability isn't everything. And that's just it. Like if you look at the news every day, like things are just like it feels like things are closing in. Or just opening up and everything is just gonna fly away. But I just feel like we just need to take up we just need to be a part of the solution in one way or another. And so sustainability is like creating less waste is a big one for me, or giving back to the earth, or just being more creative with food and what we're doing, food and the things that we're using, like repurposing and stuff like that. But yeah, but there's sustainability in everything. I remember I did a cool episode with a couple of people that do, they're called Merge Impact, and they work with farmers to sort of adjust their practices to make them more sustainable because there's so many, like the commercial farmers are they're using pesticides and stuff like that that are just not healthy for everyone. So they're just trying to make that a little bit more biodiverse and make it a little bit easier on everyone. And so they're trying to incorporate those practices. And so I had them on and I asked them the question, because I always ask everyone, what does the word sustainability mean to you? And Beth, one of the folks was like, I don't like that word. Like sustainability is not good enough. Like I do not want the world to stay like this. I'm like, I am called out and I am down with that. I agree with you 100%. So sustainability, not good enough, but we need to do something.
It's interesting because we talked about this before hitting record of somebody you connected with, we won't mention who, said nobody cares about that, right? And obviously, depending on what circles and communities you're a part of, there's a lot of people who care. There's some people that's like, hands up, it's too late. There's some people that don't believe in it. There's some. And when I say it, I mean global warming and that we actually need to take care of Mother Nature. And then there's, the people in between who maybe say they care, but then their actions don't match their value set. So I know for me, growing up in New York City, I had a very interesting childhood where I like grew up in the cement city. I was very much a city girl, loved fashion, restaurants, like very urban. But then we also had a farm in Vermont. And so I had a chance to experience what it was like to feed cows and clean up manure and, play with hay and all of those things. And we had an orchard and connect to fruits and vegetables. So I also got to taste it and touch it and get a little bit more dirty with it so that it feels real. Because when you live in a city and your only access to even our food supplies through grocery stores, our connection to those farms are so far away. And obviously has shifted more with education and social media and our ability to bridge the gap between suburban farm life and urban areas. I'm curious, like, what are some ways that are really practical that us as like busy individuals living our lives in cities, hence centered in the city, how can we stay connected to Mother Nature a little bit more?
There are so many ways. I mean, I know one of the things that I am very passionate about, I love composting because there's so much food waste. And I know you were saying that you're composting and you thought that that was pretty cool that you're from the city, but here you are composting. But composting is a big deal because if you're putting food waste in the trash, it's emitting methane gas, which causes the greenhouse gases, which are really not awesome. And so if you are doing compost, you can use that for gardening. You can do like little, and I've had people on the podcast that are talking about container gardening. So even if you're in the city, you've got to have a window or a porch or a balcony just a window. Like you can grow some herbs or something, and you can use your compost to grow these herbs or whatever, so healthy. And also in that same thing, don't get grossed out, people. Worm bins, worm compost is awesome. I have a worm compost bin under my kitchen sink. It's been there for 6 years. You would never know it. People would be like, "Isn't it smelly?" But no, you would never know it. You never know it.
Tell me more about what worm bins are, because I didn't know. I feel like I've heard of that outside, but I didn't know like that was something that you could actually have indoors.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a great thing to do in the city because you could do it anywhere. So it's a bit, I mean, you can use like a tote with a little, they have a little landing and they'll like nest in newspaper. And then you just throw your scraps in, like a pint a week or something like that, and they'll eat it up. And then you harvest them every so often, every few months, and the worms will be producing and whatever. And they'll poop, and the poop is and they'll shed their skins, and that is so that's called castings. The skin and the poop is called castings, and that is fertilizer. You can either use that itself, or you can sit it like steep it in water, and that's called worm tea, casting tea, worm tea, something like that. It's tea, so you can like water your plants with it.
And so, do you take out the worms? Like, what if the worms, like, will the worms ever get out, crawl out of their area?
I have a sheet of fabric to stop it. So, and they like it to be dark. So if you were to have them in a sunny spot, they would be way down deep.
Okay, interesting. Okay, I'm like, feel the creepy crawlies on me, but also, I feel the like, yes, that's good for the environment. It's kind of like the like good take your vitamins. My husband is like really into trash. And what I mean by that is he's since I've known him 12 years, he's so diligent and committed to making sure that trash is always organized properly. Like the recycling is over there and like very clear about what can get recycled, what can't. We can compost in Seattle. A lot of cities don't compost. I know some places in New York City are starting to allow and process composting. We compost and we don't even put it in our garden, and we have a garden because of raccoons and other fun animals. But his dedication to just even going through the trash and being conscious of it grosses me out. However, watching him do that helps me be more mindful of like the system. And I think a lot of us, like you can even, when you explore different cities, you see like different trash cans keep being developed because they're trying to teach people how to, what actually is recyclable and what's not, or what's compostable in the city, or, what's not. And it becomes really hard. And I even feel with myself, for somebody who cares, taking that moment to pause and just think before I discard is really hard. I'm curious if you have any hacks, tips, insights on how we can be processing our trash in a more sustainable way.
I don't. I'm not going to say I'm bad at that. I am a nag. I'm a nag. And I do not go, no, I won't say I don't go through the trash. I have picked things out of the trash. My husband drives me crazy because he drinks coffee. I don't drink coffee, and he'll put the coffee grounds and the little filter in the compost unless the compost is full. And then he'll put it in the trash. I'm like, do we not have bowls? We don't have bowls. There's nothing that you can put that in. You have to put it in the trash to create the methane. He's like, I wasn't thinking about it. Like, we've been together a long time. I've been working on him for a long time. Like, he eats sandwiches every single day, and he would use a clean Ziploc bag every single day. And I have cured him of that. So I'm progress.
What are your favorite ways that people can easily reduce uses of things like plastic Ziploc bags, for instance? Or is there even a more sustainable way to be making coffee that you've learned? Or like any of these like little micro practices that we can be more conscious of?
Well, I actually just bought him some reusable coffee filters. They're like fabric. They're like cotton, and you can wash them. Genius. And he stashed them away because he's whatever. And that's fine. He might be in an emergency someday and use them. But that's a really cool thing. It's two in a package. It's like $15. And so you can, have one be washing and use the other one. Another one is they're called unpaper towels, or you can make your own if you are a sewer or if you just have cloths. But like in paper towels are my understanding is they do have some like microplastics in them, which but they're not great for, they should not be composted. And we use so many. I can't even remember what the number is. It's ridiculous, like 80,000 rolls or something like that. Ridiculous amount. And so if you can find or make unpaper towels, just like rags or whatever, just like use those instead of paper towels. It'll save a lot. Those are th that th That's a really big one.
Paper towel one is big. In my family, I grew up with my brother, again, who's pretty much always in the sustainability world of interest. And he would get mad at my mom for using so many paper towels. And this was like way over 20 years ago. And we got into a practice in my house of using paper towels, like to dry our hands and then letting them dry and reusing them
I do that.
because of it. And then in my house now, we try to use rags mostly, but we still have paper towels, and we get the kind that have the rib down the middle of them so that they can break off and like become smaller paper towels, because you realize like, why do I need this big, huge thing to clean up this little mess? And we'll sometimes even rip that in half. So we're just taking like a quarter of a paper towel and use something. So we've tried to be conscious in those ways of, all right, let's be realistic. We're not going to be able to use a rag for everything. And what can we do to practice mitigating waste? So I love that, those tips about the paper towels. What else comes to mind? Even things that like you've learned from interviewing your guests that you've integrated into your own life.
Yes, I had a guest, and I do this myself. But one of my guests came on, and she was so excited to talk about how she makes her own broth, which may not seem like such a big deal. But she was like, "I just keep vegetable scraps in my freezer, and then when I need to make broth, I just add water." She's like, "It literally costs nothing, and then there's less waste." She's like, it's nothing. But then if you go to the store and you're buying broth, it comes in one of those weird cartons that's like coated in wax or plastic. So it can't be composted. It can't be recycled. It has to go in the trash. And it's like, what, $5? And if you're making
Yes.
a big soup, you buy two. So, and so she's like, that was nothing. So that's a big one.
I love that you're dropping this because in Center in the City, we have a recipe around creating your own veggie broth with veggie scraps. I will be very transparent. I don't do it often enough. And this conversation is inspiring me because I make so many vegetables and I cut off, the stems of broccoli or the wrappings of onions or garlic, and I throw those away in the compost where I could be making more vegetable broth through that. Thank you. I'm just like, my mind is blown of like, great, there's one place where I can be a little bit more conscious.
Those were some really big ones for me. And then just, in general, just being mindful about what you're just really just being mindful about what you're doing. If you are like, I want to use 14 paper towels, you do it just as long as you know that's what you're doing. 'Cause have you been to like a bathroom when someone's like pulling paper towel, paper towel, and you're like, oh, do you really need that many?
What's funny is my husband and I sometimes have that experience around people who wash their hands of like when they just keep the faucet on and let the water keep running for so much longer than it needs to be, both of our skin starts to crawl. We're like, do you really need the water still on while you're like washing the dishes every second? It's just like amazing how much little micro waste starts to show up in our lives.
I'm guilty of that, not with washing dishes, but with brushing teeth because I have super sensitive teeth and I need the water to be warm, so I have to run it for a little bit. And I do feel bad about that because if I lived in California, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Yes, like, okay, this brings up a really powerful point of like, how do we balance making conscious choices and navigating the guilt that arises when we are living in excess or not properly recycling that cup or buying the food at the grocery store and not the farmer's market?
I had a guest, his name was Fred, and he's like super sustainability person. He talked to me for a very, very long time. And he said he loves to travel. He loves to travel. He's in New Zealand right now. And traveling requires planes, which are huge fossil fuel burning things. And he's like, I do feel guilty about that, but he said everything else I do is super sustainable and I do my very best everywhere else. So I'm just like doing the best I can, but I'm not willing to give that up.
I resonate with Fred because I would say travel is my biggest impact on the world. I take a lot of flights. And my husband and I talk about how we try to carbon offset them, which is now an option for a lot, like when you go to purchase flights, a lot of airlines or even Kayak is like offering that option to offset, which I think is really important for us to be doing. The offsetting world doesn't really make that much sense to me, but it does to my husband, and so I'm following his lead. But flights, and it's like, okay, we're doing the best we can, but how often can we just say that as like an excuse to just check out and not pay attention?
I mean, people totally can do that. People can say it whenever. But, if in your mind you are doing the best that you can, That's, you know, that's all we can ask. I mean, it's what one of the memes or quotes that I keep seeing pop up is, you know, we don't need a million or everyone to be doing 100%. We need everyone doing something or something like that. Like, you know, if everyone is doing something, then we're doing better than we are right now.
Right. Every 10% makes a big difference. How much of your own food do you farm versus purchase at a farmer's market or a supermarket?
I don't farm a lot. I have a big garden. It's a failure most of the time.
What makes it a failure?
Well, it's me. I don't do heat. I don't like the heat. I don't like bugs. I don't like to sweat. So, the summer I kind of check out. But I mean, I work full time, I have a business and I have a podcast, so like I don't have a ton of time. But I'm not totally positive, but we might have the invasive jumping worms, the Asian jumping worms that are like depriving, they're like killing our soil. I just blew your mind again. I actually just went to a talk about that a few weeks ago. They're talking, so they're in, if you buy like, I want to say cheap plants from like Home Depot or whatever. Sometimes these worms will come in the soil, or like the worm eggs maybe in the soil, and they are a special worm and they do bad things. They kill the soil.
So then they kill the soil, so they kill the plant
Kill everything.
or the plants. Interesting. Whew, I know bugs are like a whole other layer. So this like kind of brings to this next point of I feel like humans, we can, especially if we don't connect to the earth or Mother Nature very often, it can be very much this mentality of like me versus them versus me. And we don't see it as it's another life force. It's we can kind of see it as something there that's supposed to work for me, right? The tree is supposed to work for me to get me paper and toilet paper and paper towels. And we don't necessarily think of the symbiotic relationship that we get or should have with nature. How do you connect with nature, or have you seen or heard people on your show really talk about how to bridge that gap of humans to nature more?
Sure. I mean, my happy place, people keep asking me that. My happy place is we have a little lawn swing, so just sitting on my lawn swing with my dog beside me and the chickens walking around. But just, I mean, we have a little lawn with the trees in the background, and it's just so nice just to sit there. It's so peaceful. But and my husband is an arborist, so we got the tree care. But I mean, I live in Maine. It's beautiful. But I had a guest on. His name is Noah, and he has a climbing business. So he will teach people climbing and hiking, climbing, like mountain climbing and ice climbing. And it's not just for like the sport, it's for the experience, like for the when you get to the top to like see this amazing vista. And I love that because it so many people are like, oh, it's the sport, like it's just, you know, I'm gonna go really fast, I'm gonna get up to the top and I'm gonna go down. But he's like teaching people to do that, and he's like, now take a moment and look. Like, look out here, and they're taking pictures all the time and just like, look at this. Like, you wouldn't have missed this if you had not done this. And I had him on the podcast for the sake of like finding awe in the world, because there's so often we're just on autopilot and we just go so fast and we're not thinking about things, and sometimes we just go places and we don't even know how we get there. But you know, just to take moments and just enjoy the beauty and to find that awe. And yeah, I mean, I've had a few guests like that. I just had one who is she's traveling the world, like She's got backpacking insurance. I didn't know there was such a thing. Backpacking insurance. She was talking to me from Brazil. Like, very cool. But you know, and just getting to know the culture and stuff like that. Like, I think that that is also important in the sustainability realm, to like to appreciate the world for what it is, to enjoy the culture, and to just understand why we're doing it. Like, because it all matters. And if you're traveling the world, you can see the good and the bad. So you have that contrast. You can be like, see, over there, it is not great. We need to take care of what we've got here.
Yeah. Okay. So just that shared so many things I want to unpack. That piece about awe is so powerful, and it hits me on just even like a spiritual level, and how when we look at a tree or a flower, it can even just offer so much awe. Like, how did this thing grow? How did it get its color? You know, how did it get the shape? And that sense of curiosity, you know, that we can bring to nature to evoke also that awe and that sense of also like gratitude for the joy it brings into our space or life, with it not necessarily doing anything. It just is being its thing. I personally, you know, growing up around a lot of nature with the farm, I never really connected to the awe-ness of nature until I started to go hiking. To your point around your interview with Noah, and started to like connect with mountains and to connect to these places. And this was before like Instagram. This was in the age of, you know, Facebook, but images. What I mean by that is like images weren't as like widely shared, and that sense of like experience snatching from taking pictures of that vista or that place in the world wasn't as popular. And I just remember seeing these places and being like, holy shit, this exists, this color of water, like what, this glacier water. And it made me just, yeah, realize that the world is bigger than me. The world is bigger than my little city bubble, and connect to that feeling of awe that you're mentioning. I will also share that gardening, again, never a big gardener, and that is thanks to my husband with the green thumb, has helped me connect to awe too, of like seeing right now very early signs of spring here in Seattle in February, where we're seeing buds, we're seeing daffodils, and I'm starting to see a raspberry bush blooming. And I'm just like, holy shit, like this is a life cycle in itself. And soon the like green leaves will be there. I mean, probably not for another month or so, but you know, those, and then my mouth starts to water just thinking about our raspberries that are going to come from, right? These beautiful like gems of deliciousness. And just seeing this whole cycle and season. And then when the leaves shed and the plant goes to sleep for the winter, it is pretty amazing how it just all has its own internal clock. And so it helps me appreciate nature way more than I ever have.
Right. Yeah. This past year, this fall, we had oaks masting, which I'd never heard of, but every few years, oaks mast, which means that they let down a shit ton of acorns, like a ridiculous amount of acorns. And so there are acorns everywhere. And so this just a few weeks ago, a friend of mine who has a vegan business, he taught a class at the library on working with acorns. And so he made some like he made cheese out of acorns, which was really cool. And he had like a recipe for some muffins, which is super cool because it's not something that people just do.
Yeah, like you don't know what you can and cannot use. Like even this last year, I was re-inspired to use carrot top greens. But usually that's something that when we'd grow, we just like chop it off, or if we get it from the store, we just chop it off and discard. And I made this pesto recipe with them that's on Center in the City, and it is delicious. So much to the point that I'm like, to my husband, oh, we need to grow more carrots this year because I want those greens. I want the greens more than the actual carrots now. So it's like, there's so much that comes in that we just discard.
Yeah. And I learned about another cool thing that I learned from a guest was celery leaf. So the leaves on the celery that you also would cut off and compost, if you like dry out those leaves and you can like put them in a food processor, they are such a good seasoning because they have that like salty flavor, but they also taste like celery. So, so good. So good. I mean, he's my Gary at Replanova, where I used to make my jam. He sells it as a seasoning. I learned that. I bought it from him once and now I make my own. And I give it away as gifts because, oh my gosh, it's so amazing.
And how do you dry it? Do you do it in a dehydrator?
You can do it in an oven, if you just do it at a low temperature.
So fun. And you can also juice them straight up. You can juice broccoli stems as well, which has a little bit of a strong taste, but you know, you can get some extra vitamin K in there. I have a facialist friend who juices watermelon rinds because there's so much water and nutrients in the rinds, just kind of like how orange peels end up having more of the vitamin C. So there's like so many ways that we can use all these good qualities of our vegetables and produce.
And watermelons have so much waste. I mean, there's just the rind is just so thick, unless you have chickens, of course, where the chickens will just take care of that. But
Amy, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Where can people learn more about you and Grounded in Maine?
I am on Instagram. That's where I'm the busiest. That's where I do the most. Just find me at Grounded in Maine podcast. GroundedInMaine.com is my website.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Amy. I want to continue the brainstorming conversation with you all because I think it's really helpful to bring our mindfulness practice into our everyday usage and think about how can I be more sustainable in my choices if that's a value of mine. And if it's not, great. And if it is, amazing. This list is not an exhausted list. It is just things that are top of mind and practices that I've heard of, that I'm trying, that are just out there. And I'm sure you are also full of great tips and practices as well. So I inspire you to join me on Instagram, tag the Grounded in Maine podcast as well. And let's continue the conversation. Let's inspire each other to keep practicing mindful sustainability. All right, so one idea on this list is thinking about your light bulbs in your house. This has been around for a very long time. My husband used to be in the lighting industry, so I think about lights a lot. And just even simply changing out your light bulbs for LEDs or more efficient lighting can have a tremendous impact on not only your bill, but on electricity usage. This is probably also another no-brainer, but something to think about: buying water bottles, buying plastic bottles is so wasteful. Can you be more intentional about carrying a reusable water bottle, a reusable coffee cup? I know I am so guilty at getting coffee cups to go at coffee shops because I like taking my time with them. I like to keep it warm. I like to carry it with me. It feels really pleasant. So that is an area that I definitely want to be more intentional about, is carrying around a reusable coffee cup when I go to cafes. However, I do reuse my coffee cups if I do get one that is recyclable. Amy and I mentioned this in our conversation, but another practice is just to be mindful of your water usage. I love that we talked about not being guilty with our choices, but just being mindful. So as you're washing the dishes, as you're washing your hands or your face or brushing your teeth, can you notice your water usage? Can you be more efficient, or can you turn it off as you're scrubbing the soap on that pan and then turn it back on when you're ready to rinse? All these little practices can definitely add up. And how can you still do it mindfully as well as also enjoying life? It doesn't have to be an either or. The same goes for our paper towel usage, which Amy and I discuss as well. Another really great practice that my husband is really great at, I can use some work. When something doesn't work, for instance, like our vacuum or an electrical toothbrush, whatever it might be, my husband has the instinct to how can I repair it so I can keep using it. I have the instinct of let's throw it out and get a new one. And I can see how my mindset around this creates more waste that just sits in landfills. And I really appreciate my husband for his dedication and energy it takes, because it does take energy to fix something, to make space on the to-do list. Yet it's a price we pay to save and reuse and not have waste. So where in your life can you maybe be more mindful of your electronic usage or your clothing usage? What can you maybe repair or sew or fix or recharge those batteries instead of throwing it out and just getting another one? Amy shared with us her lovely composting worms. Personally, I don't know if I'm ready to have worms, but we do compost, and I feel grateful that we live in a city like Seattle that can compost and has a system to hold that. I know some people in Seattle who don't like to compost. The idea of having that type of waste linger freaks them out. The smells, the threat of bugs. And I'm here to say we have never had an issue with any bugs or intense smells around the compost. We're pretty adamant about taking it out once it's full. We don't tend to make that much meat at home, and so we're not using the compost for animal protein that might get a little stinkier faster. But if that's the case with your diet, you can easily just take the compost out once it's filled with that kind of waste. I have some friends who keep their compost in the freezer because that way they just don't even have to think about the smell. Another practice that I could be more mindful with, and maybe you too, is around fast fashion. I grew up going to Forever 21, H&M, like all of those stores, Zara. There's just some really cute, cheap, affordable, and good-looking clothing out there. Yet, it does have an impact not only on the environment, but also on our health. A lot of the dyes that are used in that type of clothing tend to be more toxic and aren't made from natural fibers. And when we're wearing that clothing, it's touching our skin, the largest organ on our body. And when we're sweating or we're just breathing every day, sitting in it, it absorbs those chemicals. And to be honest, I don't know what the science and latest research is around toxicity in fabric dyes. However, I just know that we as a culture are constantly surrounded by toxic chemicals, and just reducing that could have a huge impact on not only the environment, but our health. Another practice that might already be on your radar is noting and being mindful of your transportation choices. Are you choosing to drive to the supermarket that is a 5-minute walk away? Could you walk? Could you bike? Could you take public transportation? You know, where in your life can you be more intentional about walking or biking instead of using gas-guzzling impact? Of course, if you drive an electric car, you are already being more conscious of that, even though, of course, electric cars are still pulling from the grid. We can even think about our choices from the concept of, am I taking the stairs or the elevator or the escalator? And of course, that stuff is already happening, right? There's somebody else going into the elevator, so why not take it? Like, all of these little micro choices probably don't have that huge of impact. However, if we're just even more mindful of them, we're bringing that intentionality into our everyday life. And if we're mindful of it in this little corner of our life, like, do we take the stairs or elevator? Think about how that awareness and those choices actually start to spread into other areas of your life. Maybe you're actually going to start to buy more organic fruits and vegetables or eat less meat. Okay, when I learned about this next practice, it kind of blew my mind here. All of our electrical data has an environmental impact. So here I was believing, oh, you know, being paper free is a better choice. Probably yes. And it is having a huge impact. Think of how much energy from our photos, our emails, all of our files are being stored on these databases that are now needing to be built underwater, and how much energy is then fostered into those to create a cooling environment for all these IT equipments. So it is just mind-boggling of how much impact it is when we send each other a photo, or even when we take a photo on our camera, something that I do quite a lot, or share on social media. It all is having a big impact on the environment. And the last practice to offer here in this brainstorming list is, where are you able to offset your travel? Maybe we talked about this in our conversation with Amy, but maybe when you purchase a flight, you have that option to easily tack on that extra $20, or maybe it's planting trees somewhere else. If you are somebody like me who likes to travel a lot, likes to fly and explore the world, this could also be a really helpful way to create a positive impact on the world. So, from any of these ideas that I've listed here today that you heard on the podcast, or maybe other ones that already you're noodling on or have come up in other conversations you've had with people, what's one sustainable practice that you want to try on this season? And what does it look like and feel like for you to put that into practice over the next few weeks and just to try it on? You don't have to marry it, but like, huh, what if you are a little bit more mindful of how many paper towels you use? Or maybe you are a little bit more mindful of how much online shopping with fast fashion you do. Or maybe you want to bring some mindfulness into turning off the faucet while you brush your teeth. Thinking about just what's one tiny action step that you want to bring into your life that might support you being more sustainable and giving some extra tender love and care to Mother Nature. Thank you for listening, as always.